finally, we come to the last segment, the last section of this part of the series, Kinyanim and commitments and acquisitions. And we talk about the Maisa, the actual transfer of ownership. A contract, as we mentioned, is not yet a transfer of ownership. It's a promise to perform, and when done properly, it will obligate the party. Sometimes there'll be ways of circumventing a contract if it's not drafted in an appropriate manner. However, a kinyan is the next step. A kinyan is the actual closing, the actual transfer of ownership from seller to buyer. One of the Gdolei HaDor in the last generation, he was a tzaddik who spent his entire life in his study, studying from the wee morning, the wee hours of the morning till very late at night, thousands of visitors used to come to his small rundown apartment in Bnei Brak in Eretz Yisrael in Israel for blessings, for etzus, for advice. His name was Rav Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky, very revered and respectfully known as the Stipler Goyin. He wrote scores of Sfarim, of Hebrew books in all different areas of Halacha and Hashkafa and Musar. Thousands and thousands of people knew firsthand the Stipler Goyin's table. He had a very small little table that he used to sit most of his life and study the Talmud, study the Gemara and the Poskim, and thousands of people came across that table to speak to the Stipler about every area of life. There was a wealthy individual in New York who was building a home, building a study, and he decided that in my study, I would like the Stipler's table. The Stipler had already passed on, had already been nifter. He called up a Judaica broker, and asked him, go ahead, please, get me the Stipler's table, see what you can do. So obviously there are very, very important ramifications and important things to keep in mind when going after somebody else's article. There's an Isser in the Torah, in the Aseres HaDibra, it's called Loi Sachmoid. When a person has something that's not for sale and you go ahead and you try to convince him and coerce him into releasing this item and selling it to you, a person can transgress the Yisra of Loi Sachmoid. But there are ways to do it, to merely find out if it's for sale without any pressure at all, which is the subject of another shir. This broker, very delicately and very, very respectfully approached the family of the Stipler and told him that I have a yid in New York that will agree to purchase the table of the Stipler that is now in the hands of the family. It was back and forth, and finally the price was set, $30,000 for the Stipler's table. The funds were sent overseas to the family of the Stipler, and the table was there waiting to be picked up. This philanthropist was going in a month to Israel, and he was going to go visit the family of Stipler with a moving truck and have the table, this revered table, sent over very carefully and delicately to the United States. When he showed up at the door, all of a sudden the daughter of the Stipler started bawling and crying uncontrollably. She couldn't control herself, and she turned to the individual and said, my father would be so upset for even mentioning this, but after rethinking this, it's so painful for me to see you take this table. I have charata. I want to renege. Of course, only if you agree. And the question is, what is the halacha in such a case? Do they have the right to back out? And a second question, which is also equally important, this individual was going to, the broker was going to get a commission on the sale. If they back out for whatever reason, is the broker entitled to his commission or not? Let us first understand, what is a kinyan? A kinyan is an expression of Gemiras Das. It's a display of Gemiras Das. We don't know what's going on in the buyer's mind. We don't know what's going on in the seller's mind. Verbal agreements and commitments, mental commitments, are not. We're not able to see them. We're not able to conceptualize them. They're weak. And therefore, the Chachamim, the Torah, instituted that in order to effectively activate and transfer an asset, a person has to make a Maisa Kinyan. He has to make a valid, halachically valid method of acquisition. He has to perform a method that shows his intent. There's a dispute and a discussion amongst the Acharonim how exactly it works. Some want to maintain that the intent itself is really what transfers the item. But in order for us to see and to visualize the display of this intent, it has to come to fruition through an act, because that's something that we can see. We can't see a person's intent. This line of reasoning, this logic, makes a lot of sense, you know, and explains a number of the halachas we've seen in the past shiurim. When there's the father of a groom and the father of a bride at a table discussing the very severe and very, very intense conversation of parental support and the wedding expenses, the Chachamim instituted a new takana, a new takana that these words are binding. That when we're talking in a very serious conversation, those words have more significance than a regular word, because words and thoughts have the power to transfer ownership from one to the other. Others maintain no. In those cases, it's a special dictum from the Rabbanim that they made a special case and a special takana that words should work by a shchimera, by somebody on his deathbed, by a bride and a groom in pre-wedding discussion, by other issues and other areas where we see intent and we see very, very significant commitments being made. However, normally it's not the intent that creates it, but rather the actual method, the actual maisa, the actual action of acquisition. That's really what effectuates and validates a sale. But however you cut it, in order for a sale to be effective, we need one of the many Maisa Kinyanim, one of the many acts of acquisition that are dictated to us in Choshen Mishpat and in the Gemaras, the corresponding Gemaras. There are five basic types of acquisition, five different methods, five different ideas of acquisition. And each one of these ideas have a number of methods of acquisition that are attached to it. One method is when we see a person bring an item into his possession. He makes it closer, he brings it to him, that's an acquisition. He makes a meshich, he pulls the item, or a mesira, it's given over, he makes a agbah, it's lifted up. If something comes into his courtyard, into his chatzar, it comes again closer to him. And therefore, that is a maisa kinyan. That is an acquisition. Another type is when you give the owner, you give the seller the value of the item. You give him the exchange. There's something called chalipin, when you have one person has an ox and the other one has a bull, and you'd like to switch one with the other. So you can one person makes a meshicha on one, and automatically the corresponding asset transfers over, as discussed in the Gemara. When I give money, I give cash for a piece of real estate, that the giving of the money, the transferring of the funds, that actually effectuates a kinyan. There's another type of kinyan when you show ownership, when you do an act that only an owner would do. It's called chazaka. You dig a hole, you break a lock. That shows ownership because you're doing a maisa that only an owner would do. Another type of kinyan is when you supply the seller with proof. We supply the buyer with proof of his acquisition. You write a shtar, you write a contract showing that I have given over this piece of real estate, I have transferred over this asset, or oidisa, you are moide, you go to in front of a bezin or in front of two witnesses, and you admit that this has been given over, even though there was no acquisition made, but the actual admittance, when you give a hoidoas baldin, you give an admittance to the buyer, he has eidim, he has witnesses showing and attesting to the fact that you admitted that this asset belongs to me, that itself is a maisa kinyan. Another maisa kinyan that's spoken about is when you is just a mere act of showing commitment, showing when a person lifts up a sudar, a handkerchief, we've seen many times something that's referred to in the poskim as me'ula shebekinyanim. One of the greatest types of kinyanim is a kinyan sudar. We've seen many times when you want to show by an engagement party or by a wedding. We'll see it by mechiras chametz in the rabbi's house. When we go to sell our chametz, he'll ask us to lift up a handkerchief or a pen or a yarmulke, and that the lifting up of this handkerchief shows our commitment. It shows that we're serious about what we're doing. Now, many modern-day transactions will fall into the classification called a situmta. A situmta, as we mentioned earlier, is the minig. Again, it's that also falls into this fifth section of classification of kinyanim. A situmta is one that, since there's the custom that this is how we transfer ownership. In the diamond industry, there's a custom and there's a minig that when you make a deal, you shake the guy's hand, and you say mazel and bracha, and that would constitute a kinyan, because in the bursa, in the diamond district, that's how stones are given from one to the other. We mentioned the Gemara that says when there's a barrel of wine, a barrel of beer that had to be transferred from one to the other. In the olden days, they used to put the insignia on it. That's called situmta, and that will actually be a valid kinyan, even though it's not talked about in the Paiskim. Anything that's in modern day tools, modern day transaction, that's how it's done, would go into the classification of situmta. So let's analyze, let's go back to the case of the stipler. Now, as the story has it, in the case of the stipler, the stipler's table, the philanthropist obviously felt guilty that he didn't want to take the table away, and he agreed 100% without any hard feelings to keep the table in the family of the stipler going. But what had happened there, and what was there a kinyan or not? So when it comes to the kinyan of kesef, what happened in that case was there was no mashicha. There weren't any of the five types of kinyan that we talked about. This individual hadn't taken possession. He hadn't brought into his chatzar. He didn't make a chazak. He didn't have any type of documentation. The only type of acquisition that happened was a transfer of funds. He wired the funds to the family. They received the funds. Now the question is that a maisa kinyan or not? So, api halacha midoy raisa, before the rabbis made a special takana, kesef, money, funds, was a valid maisa kinyan. A person can purchase either real estate or movables, like a table, by giving funds, by giving even a down payment, or giving a part of the payment, that's enough also to effectuate a maisa kinyan. However, the chachamim were mesakeh that if a person purchases a movable item, so there's a concept of shema nisrufu chatecha ba'aliyah, that although midaraisa money is kinyan, but there was a fear that if a person would deliver the funds, and then the seller would have, there would be a fire in the house, or possibly if he was not an honest individual, the seller has the funds, and the seller has the item. What's stopping the seller at that point from doing away with the item, from selling it to somebody else, giving it away, hiding it, telling the buyer that I'm sorry, but there was an oinus, something out of my control happened to your table. The kinyan was affected. It was effectuated with the funds. The table belongs to the buyer. The buyer had already given the funds to the seller, and the seller would walk away with the funds and with the table, or whatever the article might be. So due to this risk, the Chachamim were mesaked that kesef is not koine midrabanan, that funds, merely transferring funds, is not enough when you talk about movables. When you talk about real estate, when you talk about a building, money would be koine, even partial payment. But when you talk about a movable item, mere transfer of funds does not effectuate a kinyan, and therefore they can back out. However, the Chachamim made another decree and another halacha that if somebody backs out at that point, he gets the curse. The Bezdin will curse him by saying, Misha Paral Anshidar Amabel, that the person, the one, the creator, Hashem, the Rabbeinu Shloilam, who paid back and gave punishment to the Dor HaMabul and the Dor HaFloga, the people who lived in the times of the flood, who Yifra, he will pay back as well to somebody who's not Oimed B'Dibure and somebody who backs out after he received funds. So he's not allowed to renege unless, of course, the buyer agrees. The buyer allows him to. If there's Mechila, then it's 100% Mutter. It's 100% permitted. But if he does not agree, although the Chachamim, the rabbis, invalidated the kinyan, and the item, the article, still belongs to the seller, the seller is obligated to deliver the item to the buyer, and if he doesn't, he's subject to a curse of Misha Parla Anshadara Mabal Anshadara Floga. So again, in the rabbi's eyes, he's not allowed to go back on it. Now in our case, as the story has it, as we mentioned, the wealthy individual said, it's okay, I'm Meichel 100%, and I don't even want to take this item. Was there a kinyan or was there not a kinyan? And more importantly, what difference does it make? We said, midaraisa, there was a kinyan. Scripturally, there was funds transfer, the kinyan is effective. Midrabanan, there was no kinyan because they invalidated the kinyan of kesef. There is a mishapara, which since the seller was moichel, he absolved him of the mishapara. He can go further. There's no issue. There's no problem. But was the kinyan valid or not? So according to what we just put forth, the kinyan was not valid. What's the difference if it was valid or not? If anyway, the buyer in this case was very happy to leave the table there and not have the table. He'd rather have the blessings of the stipler's family than the table is much more important to him. The difference is when it comes to the broker. Does the broker get a commission? The answer is, if the sale is valid, the broker gets a commission. If the sale is not valid, he does not get a commission. This concept we see in Shulchan Aruch HaShem Mishpat Simen Kuf Pei Hei. It talks about a shadchan, a matchmaker. And the Rama there discusses, when does a matchmaker receive his payment? When is he supposed to get his payment? Says the Rama, there's two different areas, there's two different communities, and there's two different customs. Some people pay it right away, and therefore in that community, you're obligated to pay it right after the engagement, you have to deliver the funds right away. Some communities are of the opinion and of the custom to pay it only by the wedding. Says the Rama that what happens if there's a breakage of the shidduch? The shidduch dissolves. The chassan is not happy. He decides he's going back on it. The kala realizes this is not for me. Does the shadchan get his payment? The shadchan claims, I did the work. I made the phone calls. I was up late at night. I put them together. I did everything that was incumbent upon me. I want to get paid. Says the Rama, in the cities where the fee of the shadchan is paid upon the engagement, he gets paid right away because he did whatever it was that he had to do. The kinyan, it was effective. However, if the fee in the places in the communities where the fee is paid upon the marriage, in that case, says the Rama, if the shidduch is dissolved before the marriage, the shadchan will not be entitled to a fee. Similarly, if this this acquisition was valid, if kesef would be koine, the agent would be entitled to a fee. I made the acquisition. The acquisition was consummated. I want to get paid. You have issues, and you're agreeing to undo and to resell back to the seller what's due to the buyer. That's not my issue. I did mine. The agreement was valid, and therefore, I want to get paid. However, since midrabbanan, the rabbis dissolved this acquisition, and it's merely a mishapara. It's a very nice thing for the seller to follow through, and if the sellers would not follow through, they would be subject to a curse. But since in Hilchas Choshen Mishpat, that's not a valid acquisition, the agent would not be entitled to a fee because the acquisition was not consummated. It got very close to being consummated, and he was actually about to take possession. But since the agreement was undone before the actual acquisition was consummated, the agent is not entitled to a fee, and that was the Psak Halacha. The same thing we find in any real estate agreement. When there's a real estate broker who spends hours and hours and months of deliberation and months of negotiation, and he gets them to the table, and at the last minute, the whole deal falls through. He's not entitled to anything because his entitlement is not for his efforts. His fee is a brokerage fee based on the actual consummation of the deal. The question does arise: if they take possession, and months later, for some reason, there's a mum in the mekach, there's a mekach tois, there's a default that the engineering report didn't find. And it was something, so for some reason, after the possession was after the deal was consummated, after the closing, for some reason there's a lawsuit that tries to undo the actual deal. In that case, depending on if it would be something that's inherent in the actual sale, then the mekach tois would dissolve l'mafreya, and there would be no deal, and the closing would be really ineffective, even though it looked like it was effective. But since in the actual item there was a defect of such magnitude that invalidates the entire sale, there's a concept of l'mafreya. It goes retroactively. The sale is invalidated retroactively, and therefore, even though if the real estate broker had been paid already, if the defect is one that invalidates it retroactively, then he might have to give it back. However, if it's not something that happens retroactively, but it's a new circumstance that's undone, in that case, since the deal was consummated and since the deal was finished, the broker is entitled to his fee.
This presentation has been brought to you by the Orthodox Union in conjunction with the Beis Chabad Institute of Talmudic Law, the Center for the Study and Practice of Monetary Halacha.